Yeah. This is the Freedom Fiends Talk Radio Musical Extravaganza, broadcasting from Pod Bay 2A, a mile above sea level at Intergalactic Prairie Studios. We alter your locus ceruleus by warming your synapses with rejuvenative radio waves. This keeps a sin flood of statism out of your brain. Can you feel it? Is it working, Chandler? Can you feel it?
It's working, brother.
So I'm Michael Dean, Freedom Fiend, Iron Hamster. And we got Chandler St. Pierre. What is your wrestling name there, sir?
I am the Jabbering Coon Cat.
Yeah, you are. Yeah, you are. And you're in Maine. Is it cold there tonight?
It's not too bad. I got to tell you, it's been unseasonably warm the last week. And yesterday being the day, the holiday that it was, I chose to stay off the internet because I couldn't stand the nationalism and hero worship of the soldiers and all that stuff. By the way, the show yesterday with Bill was great. I really enjoyed it.
Yep, he's good.
And man. Yes. So I decided to go wander out in the woods yesterday all day, and it was absolutely beautiful. I didn't have to wear my snowmobile suit out in the woods. I just had my regular camouflage clothes on, and it was wonderful.
Cool.
I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, it's a little... What's the temperature there in Maine?
Well, I think it's in the high 30s right now, because in my house, according to my atomic clock, in my office, which is usually the coldest room in the house, it is 67, so it's not too cold out today.
Yeah, you don't have that clock on a wall, do you?
I do not.
Okay, yeah, because the thermometer is pretty off if you have it on a wall. But yeah, in the middle of the room, it's usually accurate. But I win for the temperature award. It is negative 25 degrees here in my little section of paradise in Wyoming.
Yeah, that's paradise.
That is cat cracking cold, man. That is my cat. This morning it was 20 degrees below last night, and it was 2 degrees below when we woke up. And my cat wanted to go out in the backyard for some well supervised fun. And she just sat at the back door like yelling. And I'm finally like, okay, I'll show you why you don't want to be out there. And I took her out in the back. She took like one step with all 4 feet out till her 4 feet were out on the pavement, and she turned around and came back in. And tonight she wants to go out too, and I'm not even going to take her out there because I think it would physically harm her to take one step out into 25 below weather.
Oh yeah, that stuff is crazy. I mean, it's not unheard of to be that cold in Maine, but that's cold. I mean, yeah. I can remember last winter. You know, I worked a 9-to-5 thing, and I'd get up at about 7, take the dog out, and start my car up to warm it up. And it would be like -2, and it's just, it goes right through you to the bone.
Yeah. Yep. So we're going to talk about technology here on the Freedom Fiends. And I do want to start by saying it's nothing to do with technology, but Barack Obama is a liar. He is a socialist, and his feet stink.
And he doesn't get technology.
Oh, but he's in favor of net neutrality, which is one of the many reasons we're against it. But that's not, I was against it back in the Bush days, too.
Well, it's interesting because I was on Electronic Frontier Foundation.
Yeah. How do they feel about it? Because they're pretty smart. But
well, they posted an article that the title was Obama Gets It, Will the FCC? And it was about net neutrality. Now, Obama is coming out saying that the FCC needs to change their rules on net neutrality. So he's trying to be the good guy, I guess. But the fact is they're still trying to impose net neutrality. They just want to tweak it a little because, you know, what's the saying? We're three laws away from paradise.
That's what progressives think. We're three laws away from perfection. But actually the head of the Federal Communications Commission right now, the government agency that allocates bandwidth on old technology like radio, like we're on, and for some reason wants to have their fingers in the pie of new technology, which is ridiculous because, you know, if you could make any argument that the FCC ever had a reason to exist, it would have been for, you know, broadcast radio and television because, you know, broadcast radio back in the day when that was the only method of communicating, it was important for, you know, national disasters and presidential fireside chats and crap like that. So, you know, it was the only way to get information out So the government considered it very important to, quote unquote, protect it. And in addition to that, like, they kept you from cussing on it. We still can't cuss, even though, you know, everybody cusses all the time everywhere. You can't cuss on radio. And, you know, that was to protect the children because, you know, families would listen to the radio together. And now there's probably not a family in the world where the parents and children listen to the same radio shows. Maybe someone's sitting there listening with their kids. That'd be pretty cool. But I don't know, man. If your kids are awake, there's probably something wrong with your parenting skills if they're really young kids, because yeah, it is late, man.
Well, the reason the FCC is trying to govern the internet rules is because...
mission creep.
Well, there's mission creep, and they've classified ISPs and the internet in general as a telecommunications service rather than an information service.
Of course
service.
They have.
Yeah.
And the reason... the other reason that, you know, you could make some minarchist statist argument for the need of the existence of the FCC would be because radio transmissions, which includes television transmissions before cable, you know, when it was over the air, you know, and all kinds of radio transmissions, walkie-talkies, you know, internet over radio, all kinds of radio stuff, FM radio, AM radio, microwave communications for military purposes, everything radio. I mean, we're just radio waves. You're soaking in them right now, wherever you are. If you can be in the most remote part of the woods and you're still soaking in radio waves, but they're a limited resource. They were a limited resource back in the day. So the FCC, it could be argued, needed to exist to allocate, you know, the 40 or 50 slots on an AM or FM band in a given geographic region. With the internet, there is literally there's an unlimited amount of channels possible. So they really don't have that excuse, and they want to because of mission creep. You know, an interesting thing, the guy who is the chairman of the FCC, Thomas Wheeler, who was appointed by Barack Obama, was one of the main fundraisers for Barack Obama. Funny how that works in government.
Didn't he used to be head of Comcast or one of the big companies too?
Comquack or Quack, yeah. Quack. I don't know. I'm making up words. Hyper Global MegaNet. Yeah.
Those yeah. Are, from The Simpsons.
Yeah. But let's see. Tom Wheeler. Let's look at his bona fides. Career. He worked at, he worked for the National Cable and Telecommunications Association. He was a lobbyist.
That's what he was, a lobbyist. Yep. Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, you could make an argument either way if you believe in government. You could make an argument that it's a conflict of interest to have someone who's been heavily involved in an industry work on a regulatory board for that industry. And, you know, you could make the argument that you would do better for the people just picking a random person out of a crowd. But then there's the argument of a random person out of the crowd wouldn't know the industry, you know, so who knows? Who knows? Here's what I think. I think that the reason part of the reason there's not an unlimited band and for all practical purposes, unlimited bandwidth with radio and television, and there kind of is with television with cable, but is because of the FCC, because of regulations and of, you know, not just the FCC, but the you know, the trade, all the trade sanctions within America and all the things you have to do for a startup, because literally using digital transmission, which has kind of been barely rolled out. I mean, the FCC kind of mandated it at one point, but then let the deadlines pass. And, you know, not just the FCC, but every three-letter agency in the government got in the way of innovation in the field of digital transmission and carrier subcarrier waves with digital transmission. Like literally, you know, the amount of space on an AM dial between two stations right now that you have to have between two stations to not have them step on each other. You could put in like 1,000 stations. You know, if you use digital transmission, you could use a lot thinner amounts of bandwidth for each one, but hasn't happened because, you know, now all the trade organizations. Yeah. Everything's in the way of it. I mean, yeah.
Well, you know, the argument for net neutrality, which will not accomplish the stated goals.
Oh, it'll accomplish the opposite goals. It will further regulate free speech on the internet and further drive up the price of internet access. And the funny thing is, like, it basically came out that the Obama administration made a promise to the major telecom companies, like, yeah, let us pass this and then we'll let you not have to do anything in it. So it's like, what's their goal of passing it if they're not going to make them do everything in it?
Well, the thing that people fail to realize is the government has created duopolies with communications.
Were you
companies.
Listening to Free Talk Live today?
No, why?
Because someone called in and used that exact sentence, but it's out there. It's the truth, man. It's the truth. Well, and most people don't know it. Yeah.
Because if you look at any geographic location locally, like in where I am in Maine, we have Fairpoint, which is DSL, and we have Time Warner, which is cable. And that's it. You know, I think there's a couple of small startup companies. There was a small startup company that I was with for quite some time that I really liked because, for one thing, their tech support was all local people in Maine.
Yeah.
And they were very good. But even the small startups run on the lines that the big companies, though. So the government creates these duopolies and gives these two companies the power, and without that competition, they can dictate the price and they can provide whatever and service.
Yeah,
they
dictate
want.
The service is a bigger issue. Like, I would actually be willing to pay more than I'm paying now for internet, for incredibly solid internet with great service. Not everybody would, but I would because I'm doing a show over it 7 nights a week. But I mean, there's not even a duopoly in my town. There is a monopoly. It's Charter Internet is the only cable provider. And anyone who's been listening to this show for the past couple months has listened to my troubles with Charter to the point where I had to go out and get a second internet connection that was DSL and then get a router that picks between the best of the two. So,
yeah.
And there's only one DSL company in town too. So,
well, people should think about, and I know a lot of folks out there have short memories, but car insurance didn't used to be mandatory. And once the government got involved and mandated car insurance, the insurance companies got together and set a standard for what people were going to pay and what services they were going to receive. And it just went down the tubes really
quick. Yeah, but
quick.
Actually there was a silver lining in that was that not that long ago, the government allowed competition across state lines for car insurance and the price went down a bit. And they don't allow that for health insurance.
No.
Yep. All right, we'll be back after this trip to the free market.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends, and I'm beaming these words into your cerebellum. When you shop online, please do it through the Freedom Fiends Amazon link over on the right side of freedomfiends.com. It won't cost you any extra, and the fiends will get a little taste from Amazon, and Amazon will save you the danger of drive-by stabbings at your local mall. Amazon sells pretty much everything you can buy on this earth, except for guns and weed. But they do sell the DVD Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom. So get that for your gun-hating stoner brother or neocon gun nut dad. They'll thank you for it. That's freedomfiends.com. Freedom, Foxtrot, Echo, Echo, November, Sierra.com.
We're talking about net neutrality and how it's a big government scheme to steal your freedoms and jack up your prices. So why is it the opposite of what it's sold as? It's basically net neutrality is a bill they've been trying to pass in Congress for a long time. And they might be doing a runaround and just doing it by regulation with the FCC. But basically, they try to sell it as, this will protect your internet freedoms and keep your prices down. And it will probably do the exact opposite on both counts. And the funny thing is, there's a lot of really smart tech people who are concerned with freedoms on the internet who buy it hook, line, and sinker, that it's going to help them. And it's really not.
Well, yeah. I posted an article today.
I like the title of it.
Am I the only techie against net neutrality?
It's by Joshua Stymie.
Yep. And he's definitely not. Now, one of the things that people complain about is that these corporations that provide internet services have too much power. And I agree that I won't say they have too much, but they have a lot of power. And sometimes they use it in very shady ways. But it's not because of a lack of regulation by the U.S. government. It's specifically because there's so much regulation and not enough competition. And people fail to get that.
I would agree with you on the competition thing, but I would not agree with you that corporations might not have too much power. I think almost all of them have too much power, and many of them abuse that power. Basically, but, I think it's totally possible to become a millionaire without being evil. I don't think you can be a billionaire without being evil.
Well, the thing that people just don't seem to get, the Occupy movement was a big one for me. They were always railing against corporations, rightly so, but they wanted to get the government to fix it, and they don't understand who gives corporations their power. It's the governments of the world. Yeah, a corporation is a legal fiction that's created by a government. So when you're asking a government to fix that, it's like, no, you don't understand how things work.
Yeah, and the phrase legal fiction, I think, requires some explanation, because just saying it's a legal fiction sounds like it is true. I mean, that is an actual legal term, but it kind of sounds like sovereign citizen voodoo, and it's not. What we're basically saying is that corporations have they're unaccountable in the way that persons would not be. Like,
they have limited liability.
Right. They can dump battery acid into a river, you know, kill a bunch of people, and not face any criminal penalties. They're going to have to pay a lot in fines, and they're going to probably have a lot of civil suits. But yeah, and then they're going to have the advantage in the court in that too, most of the time. So, I mean, a legal fiction, a lot of people use that term, a lot of libertarians and sovereign citizens and Occupy Wall Street types. And literally, it is a type of legal maneuver. Like, for instance, when you adopt a child, a legal fiction is created, and that is the proper legal term for it, in that on paper, you become the actual parent, not just for all intents and purposes, but like legally, you become practically the biological parent of that. Like, you know, there is a legal fiction created that you are the parent of that child. And I'm not saying there's anything wrong with adoption. You know, did I say adoption? I did say adoption, right?
Yes, you did.
Okay. Yeah, but that's a legal fiction. And a corporation, legal corporate personhood is a legal fiction, where like a corporation has some of the rights of an individual, for instance, free speech.
But not the responsibilities.
But not the responsibilities, yeah.
Well, if you look at Wikipedia, a legal fiction is defined as a fact that is assumed or created by the courts.
There you go.
So, and I think people aren't looking at it logically, too. You look at the Obamacare website.
I would rather not.
Yeah, I know, right? I still haven't been. I'm thankful. But they spent all that time and money. I believe the stats were, I found it interesting. The amount of time and money they spent on the Obamacare website was equal to Facebook's first 6 years of operating costs.
And it didn't work.
It's still flawed to this day. So we're going to trust this entity that everyone complains about, left and right. Everybody complains about the government. So we're going to trust them to ensure our freedoms and our privacy and our security on the internet.
Oh, and the same thing, you know, if you want an example of how government healthcare is going to work, I mean, look at the Veterans Administration. And the Veterans Administration probably gives better health care to the veterans than they're going to give to non-veterans. But the complaints of how veterans are treated under the VA is just endless.
Yes.
You know, even by veterans. I mean, it's not by left and right. Yeah. We'll be back.
You're listening to The Freedom Fiends, an invigorating alternative to those other shows.
Yeah.
I was showing my
having outgrown childish libertarian fantasies, I now believe in worms. What is Libertarians Against Humanity? It's the only unofficial Cards Against Humanity expansion pack by libertarians, for libertarians, and against libertarians. Libertarians Against Humanity is free to play online, or join the Indiegogo campaign to get physical copies and other perks to play with friends or statists you haven't defued yet. Because if we don't laugh, the statists win.
Not recommended for faint heart, thin skins, or those who easily rustle jimmies. Consult a physician if you experience dropped blood pressure or laughter last longer than 4 hours.
That's libertariansagainsthumanity.com.
Yeah. Freedom Fiends.
Is this the late night with the Freedom Fiends?
This is the late night with the Freedom Fiends. So we're talking about net neutrality, a big government plot to steal your rights. And you know,
isn't government a big plot to steal your rights anyway?
Yeah. Yeah. And your money, which net neutrality is also a plot to do. I'm just astonished how many people like the idea of net neutrality. Even the EFF, Electronic Yes. Frontier Foundation, or is it Electronic Freedom Foundation? I forget. It's EFF.org. Yeah. But
Frontier Foundation.
They're good people, and they sue the government a lot to get back some of your rights and money. And we've played an ad for them for free for a couple months before that we made. But yeah, man, I'm amazed how many really, really smart, like longtime early adopter of tech kind of people back this whole idea of we need government to protect us from government. And, you know, not just that fallacy, but also the fallacy that a law is actually going to do what it's supposed to do, when there's a lot of evidence out there that the telecoms have already made backdoor deals with the FCC to not have to abide by this. So it's like, what's the point of putting through a law or regulations that are not going to have to be abided by? It's got to have some kind of other little little presence, kicks in the groin kind of presence for the consumer.
Well, I think, like, when you're talking about groups like EFF and a lot of tech savvy people, their intentions are good. And they understand that there's a problem and they want to change it. But yes, I don't understand why they immediately turn to government instead of the market. Maybe it's propaganda that we're, you know, I have a friend on
Facebook. It's being raised in government schools for 12 years at least, and then 2 or 4 years of, you know, a lot of tech people have, you know, degrees or advanced degrees in college. So they've had 2 or 4 or 5 more years of government school, you know, state run school. Yeah. And, you know, if you're going for a tech degree at Stanford or MIT, you're still taking classes that have a certain amount of indoctrination. I mean, you're still going to be taking an English class or a history class or a sociology class to get your full, you know, to get your degree. And even just the tech classes you're taking, you know, you're probably going to be learning from somebody who was, you know, the computer administrator in the Army Corps of Engineers or something like that. Or, you know, somebody that was on the government teat at some point. A lot of those people end up working in colleges. So, yeah, the whole thing is going to brainwash you to believe that the government is the solution to the problems that the government makes.
Well, you know, I have a few friends, one in particular that I really enjoy. He's a really great person. But he will rail against corporations, rightly so. But he will assume that it's all because of the market. And sometimes I'll see some digs at libertarians and the whole, the market will solve everything. And I think people have this disconnect where they think that what we're seeing now is the true free market, and it's really not. You know, it's manipulated and controlled. We don't have a free market unless you work in the underground or the black market. And
well, that's still not a free market. I mean, like the, you know, the drug economy or the underground weapon economy is more free market than the above ground free market, but it's a free market that exists the way it does because it'd be illegal in the main market, you know?
Right.
So it's not like the free market, because in a true free market, you know, you wouldn't have competitors wanting to kill you to take your business.
Yes. It bothers me that the, you know, when we talk about getting to a free society and everything that entails, you know, whether it's net neutrality or healthcare or choosing what you put in your body, there is so much propaganda to overcome, and it's very frustrating at times because we try to show people that there is another way. You know, a lot of criticism of libertarians is that all we do is complain and we don't provide solutions. And I think that's a false dichotomy.
And it's also kind of a rigged game, because a lot of the solutions we'd want to try are either illegal or heavily regulated to the point where it'd be impossible to try it. You know, like, you know, we have a friend who's a DNA scientist who actually, you know, like runs a corporation that, you know, makes helps work towards diagnosing cancer and coming up with better treatments for it. I mean, he's not big pharma. He's, you know, it's a, but he, like, literally, like, he has to go to Iceland. You know, his company's, he's American. His company's partially based in Iceland because the regulations are such that it'll work. And one of the things he did for kicks one time was he sequenced the genome of the marijuana plant and patented it as a defensive patent against the government or anyone else patenting it and keeping people from using it for medicine. So that was a pretty cool thing that he did. But one of the things that he did was he actually set up a DNA lab in his garage to do that. And one of his neighbors like looked in his garage window and said, like, are you running a meth lab? You know? Yeah. So he had to like move it offshore to another country to do it, you know?
Yeah. It's really scary. And a friend of mine told me a funny story yesterday. She had posted.
And if anybody thinks like this is some like wild and crazy mad scientist, if you are someone who believes in the government, this is somebody who was actually honored at the White House for his contributions to the Human Genome Project back in the Carter administration. So there.
I thought it was in the Clinton administration.
One of those guys that began with a C from the South that, you know, seemed like a friendly guy you'd want to have a beer with, but actually was just another tyrant like all of them, like all the Republican Democrats and Republicans.
Yeah, not so much. So, when you talk about indoctrination that people need to overcome, a friend of mine had posted on Facebook the other day, I'm at such and such a place and there's a speed trap, which a lot of us do because we don't want our friends to...
You're basically, it's like in grade school when you tell your friends, hey, the bully's waiting around the corner, you know?
Exactly.
It's self-defense.
It is self-defense. And she has a cousin or something that she didn't even realize who's a cop in Massachusetts and said, you know, I really don't appreciate you posting that. She was like, well, why? And she's like, you got to understand that when you post stuff like that, groups like Al-Qaeda and ISIS target cops and they use people like you that post a police presence as a means to target us.
As if cops aren't entirely visible most of the time anyway. Although more and more they're not. I mean, they're actually coming out with squad cars that look like civilian cars for the most part.
Oh, we are seeing that up in Maine so much. But, you know, so we're laughing about this and it seems utterly ridiculous. But these people really believe that, you know, they're part of the system. And they're not necessarily bad people, but they've been indoctrinated so much. So this is what we need to overcome when we talk about exposing people to the fallacies.
I thought you were going to say that the cop said that when you post things like that, Al-Qaeda and ISIS will speed and get away with it.
Yeah, well, that's what I thought too at first. But it's so ridiculous, you know. So it's very frustrating at times. And one of the things when people say...
I don't know that Al-Qaeda and ISIS are in America.
I don't. So,
but I'm sure that guy has had, you know, I'm sure all cops have sat through some Department of Homeland Security dog and pony show, you know, PowerPoint presentation that warns you that they're here already. And, you know, that tells you to be on the lookout for Bitcoin and then shows an image of an actual like medallion with a B on it, which is not what Bitcoin is, which led to the TSA harassing our friend Davi Barker at the airport for having some Bitcoin, not bombs, buttons, you know, pins.
Well, and that type of propaganda eventually leads to, so it seems ridiculous that ISIS or Al-Qaeda would be in America and target these police officers. So then what that will lead to is they'll say, well, maybe it's not them, but libertarians and Christians and homeschoolers and gun owners and veterans, they'll target us and they'll come after us. So we can't have you posting that because that makes us vulnerable. See, it leads to everybody becoming the enemy.
I have a really good idea for a bumper sticker that would probably sell well among libertarians and homeschoolers and Christians and everyone else you named. A bumper sticker that says, next time there's a terrorist attack, keep in mind the government was watching me instead.
And that's so true. I mean, think about how much, if you believe that there are other entities out there that mean people of a certain nation harm, wouldn't it make sense for that nation to focus their efforts on watching them instead of its own citizens? But that's not, you know.
I made up a great conspiracy theory today.
Oh, yeah?
I don't believe it, but it's possible. And it would be, it's something that would be funny to like put out there and see if it sticks. What if the 9/11 truthers idea was created by the government?
You've said a lot of what ifs these conspiracy theories were created by the government. And it's entirely possible too.
I mean, I'm trying to think what the advantage would be. The one thing I can think,
it creates dissent.
Yeah, it creates, well, it creates disorganization and fracturing, so people can't focus on a single idea, like the government is immoral and corrupt and can't be fixed, you know, so they can't get strong enough to get enough people to withdraw consent, that the government becomes like MySpace, where it's still got 300 million users and none of them have logged in 5 years.
I mean, it would make sense, because no matter what, and we've said this many times before, no matter what your thoughts on 9/11 are, whether you're a truther or you believe the official story or whatever, because there's so much varying opinion, people tend to overlook what has happened as a result.
Yeah.
And that's where I think the focus should be.
Because, yeah, taking away the Jail All the Patriots Act. I mean, the Patriot Act and everything that came out of that. But here's the other thing I can think, too, is that I kind of don't believe that the government caused 9/11. And if they did, most people who believe they did are kind of idiotic, because they scream in my face and show me blurry pictures with red arrows added on them and say, this is proof, when it doesn't even qualify as evidence, let alone proof. But I absolutely believe that 9/11 happened as retaliation against policies of the United States government, of being over there all the time, acting like the police of the world and stealing
blowback.
Yeah. Stealing people. I mean, the CIA said that, or was it the FBI? One of them a few years before that said, you know, talked about the word, they coined the word blowback for that phrase, you know,
the CIA did. CIA,
yeah. Yeah. It used to just mean a method of operating a rifle, you know, blowback operated rifle, but they took that phrase and applied it to, you know, the unintended consequences of
foreign operations.
But yeah, in particular, they were talking about that, like, something may happen because of the U.S. involvement in the Middle East. So I think that's absolutely true. And I can't see how anyone could see that as a conspiracy theory. Ron Paul said that from the floor of the Congress right before it happened. But I think that the 9/11 truther thing could be created by the government to distract people from considering that option. We'll be back.
Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean. This is what radio sounds like now.
Are you tired of your taxes funding endless occupations around the world? Antiwar.com is run by people who understand that wars abroad become wars at home, wars on our freedoms. Antiwar.com is dedicated to bringing you the latest in news, views, interviews, and reviews from the top movers and shakers in the anti-occupation movement. Antiwar.com has it all, from thorough foreign policy analysis to interviews with whistleblowers who used to run the military-industrial complex. Antiwar, pro-free market. That's antiwar.com.
Now that the elections are over and liberty has slipped even further away, it's time to try yet another political organization. Campaign for a Longer Leash is a nonpartisan group of pups and dogs dedicated to fighting for longer leashes for all. We're not talking about no leashes, that would be catarchy. We just want the limited leash that the Hounding Fathers promised us. As Bone Barklin once said, a longer leash if you can keep it, ma'am. For more info, go to facebook.com/campaignforalongerleash.
So I'm 50 years old. 50. 50. I'm 50. I was born in 1964.
I'm 102.
I had, no, you're not. I had duck and cover drills to hide from Russian nukes in kindergarten. And, you know, we were taught that the Russians were our mortal enemies. And now I'm like, Russians, they're just the funny people in Grand Theft Auto. You know, they're not a threat anymore. And, you know, they're doing the same thing with the Middle Easterners now, with all of them. Because there's a few bad ones. There's a few bad Russians, too. There's some Russian mobsters out there. But for the most part, people around the world, you can't really judge a whole people by where they're from or what they worship. And I've traveled the world a lot, and I've met a lot of good people everywhere. And most people who say, America's the greatest nation on earth, and it's the only nation, you know, like, basically have a ethnocentric view of you know, even talking to someone outside the nation or speaking of them is exogamy, you know, that's not true. You're not marrying outside your tribe by quoting a Russian scholar. And I think there's a lot to learn from writers from the Soviet era, which literally, like, that would have been treason on the radio when I was a kid. You know, no one would have dared say that. But we can look back on it now and like, if you read things like Alexander Solzhenitsyn, who wrote the Gulag Archipelago, which is a great book that's about 40,000 pages long, you know, he survived under the Soviet Empire and, you know, was in the camps for being a dissident. And it kind of tells you where America's going right now. You know, same thing if you study the East Germans and the fall of the Berlin Wall, and then especially the erecting of the Berlin Wall. Ich bin ein Berliner. So go ahead there, Chandler.
Well, people are not their nations, and I think folks would do well to remember that.
Yeah, like especially when you sanction a nation, you're really sanctioning like small businessmen more than you're hurting the government.
Yeah, you're not hurting the government. So I think people should remember that. And one of the quotes that Solzhenitsyn put out there that I really liked was, "A state of war only serves as an excuse for domestic tyranny."
A state of war, if you can keep it, ma'am.
And we certainly are keeping it, aren't we? I mean,
I'm not.
Okay, so yes, thank you for correcting me. The national government of this geographic location is definitely keeping it. And it seems to be that we've all heard the quote, war is the health of the state. And I really think it is. And the nations of the world, particularly the United States, have just perpetuated this idea of fear and war continually, that it just must continue. And has it made us any safer? Has it made us any more prosperous? No.
It's done the opposite.
Yeah, we've seen the rise of domestic tyranny. And the government would define domestic tyranny as maybe this show or, you know, gun owners. And we've seen all that. But I define domestic tyranny as, you know, being pulled over because you have the wrong bumper sticker on your car, or being harassed by state officials because you have the wrong beliefs. To me, that is what domestic tyranny is, and it is definitely on the rise.
It's un-American too. I mean, if you really think about like what defines America, if you look at some of the founding documents, I wouldn't say the Constitution as a whole, because that basically sets up the federal government we have now. But if you look at the Declaration of Independence, and which also has a lot of contradictions in it, it's kind of yelling for more government and less government at the same time. But you know, I like the vibe of it. And the Bill of Rights, you know, if you look at the Bill of Rights, which to a lot of people defines what makes America different from other countries, although North Korea has a right to free speech in their constitution. So
yeah,
stuff scribbled down on paper doesn't really guarantee anything. And if anybody out there is throwing things at the radio and saying, "You're wrong, we have a piece of paper," how's that working out for you lately?
Well, and I think that a lot of the minarchists and freedom-oriented people that think government can guarantee that, they might do well to read the Anti-Federalist Papers.
They're not going to read that. It's too long, man.
Actually, no. You want to know what's too long? The Federalist Papers are very long, drawn out, and boring. The Anti-Federalist Papers are just...
Okay, we got... we're going to the break here. We're going to come back for hour two after this trip to the market, and then some news, federal news, it'll horrify you, and then a little more market. And we do have a new resource. If you go to the Freedom Fiends blog, freedomfiends.com/blog, there's a new tab on there, new page on there called Resources for Those New to Liberty. And there's a great reading list on there compiled by myself and Ben Stone, the Bad Quaker, and Bill Bupert, who is an avid reader. And it also lists some podcasts and movies and stuff you should check out. But yeah, go to freedomfiends.com/blog and click on the link that says Resources for Those New to Liberty. All right, worms.
Shiny badges on your jacket. Shiny badges. Yeah!
This is Davi Barker from ShinyBadges.com, and I just want to personally apologize for airing a jingle week after week, month after month, that turned out to be such an infectious brain worm. So to make it up to you, I'm offering a free gift. The next time you make a purchase at ShinyBadges.com, write WORMS in the transaction comments, and I'll send you something weird.
Do you believe in free speech? Jay Raven had her True Shives YouTube channel taken down. We believe this censorship was wrong, and we believe the channel is a clear example of free speech. Many people are bullied on the internet, but Jay Raven actually stood up to the bullying. She has filed a self-defense lawsuit against the individuals who took down the channel. The outcome of this suit could be very important to the future of free speech. Learn more at trueshibes.com. That's Tango, Romeo, Uniform, Sierra, Hotel, India, Bravo, Echo, Sierra.com. trueshibes.com. Broadcasting live and worldwide from a windowless bunker at an undisclosed location in the rural wild mountain west in the occupied states of America. Are you there, Chandler?
I'm here.
Yeah. You've not been droned?
No.
Talk a little bit. Tell me a little about yourself.
What do you want to know?
I just want you to talk.
All right. Well, I'm broadcasting from Maine and, you know, I'm having a little bit of technical difficulties at the moment.
I'm actually doing a sound check. That's why I wanted you to talk. This is live radio. This is a teaching hospital, and we actually tried a different configuration during the break and didn't have time. He had to reboot his computer. So I'm EQing him on the fly. So go ahead, tell me about yourself, sir.
Yeah. So anyway, I'm in Maine, and it's unseasonably warm. It's not cold, which I like, but I know that cold weather's coming. But you know, it's rural and it's quiet up here and I really like it.
Yeah.
And it's close to New Hampshire. So when Porkfest time comes, I can just drive an hour and a half and I'm there.
I'm looking forward to Porkfest and
Me too.
Yep. And my friend who house sits for us is looking forward to Porkfest too, because we have like one friend in this town. Because, you know, I don't need people around. I talk to him on the internet. Which, you know, some people would say is kind of sad and kind of creepy, but I have spent enough time like out among crowds in my life that I'm kind of done with it at 50. I just want to hang out with my wife, my cats, and my two internet connections and do radio, talk in one direction of the world. But I do go to Porkfest once a year, and my, you know, if I see my shadow, we'll have five more years of tyranny. So, but we have this guy that house sits for us when we're out of town. And he's, you know, he's an honest guy. He's a friend of ours. We know him. We trust him. But he lives in like a little tiny studio apartment. So, you know, we have a house, you know, it's a pretty big house for two people. It's like 2,000 square feet upstairs and then downstairs finished basement. So, he gets to come over and we pay him, buy him food to like house sit and just hang out in our house and keep an eye on our stuff and play with our cats. It's like the best job. I wish I could have that job. I wish I could be paid to hang out in a nicer house and play with cats once a year or all the time. I mean, yeah,
that would work totally.
Yeah. But I'm already here. So it's nice, man. So we're going to talk about this thing called Thrive. Thrive is, and this is part of my ongoing series of things that are wrong with the Liberty mission, because the Liberty movement, because a lot of people don't like to talk about this kind of stuff, about the people that are doing it wrong in Liberty. Because first of all, a lot of people in the Liberty movement who people have heard of, who have an audience, are trying to make a living at it. I'm not trying to make a living at it. I am smart. I don't quit my day job. My day job is working at home with cats sitting on my lap doing technical writing. I make a little bit of money doing radio, but not much. It covers expenses because we mostly give away our ads to well-meaning groups or groups that are good, like antiwar.com. And we do take some donations. And it covers expenses and then enough for, you know, maybe a burrito a day. So I keep my day job doing a little bit of documentary filmmaking and a lot of technical writing. And it's some of the tech writing is like cool stuff where my name gets on a book and it's in bookstores. But a lot of it is like not even credited. It's like I get the text for like a Blu-ray player manual that's made in China or Japan. And they wrote the manual in Chinese or Japanese. And then someone in China or Japan from that country who speaks some English translates the manual to English. But it's, you know, it's what they call English. It's, you know, not very good English that doesn't make sense. And then I take that and translate it and rewrite it so it's in very good English. And that's a lot of the kind of technical stuff I do. Or, you know, I'm sent the technical specs on a piece of software. Someone else has already written them. And then I have to test them. Like I do, I don't even do a lot of writing on that kind of stuff. I do, you know, testing the installation manual, you know, directions to see if it actually works. And I actually install the program and then delete it. Because a lot of people who do that kind of technical writing that I'm rewriting, they actually, they're programmers, you know, so they're not really end users and they kind of think like programs. I guess I'm kind of like the guy in Office Space who says, I deal with the GD customers, you know, because he says his job description is the liaison between the programmers and the clients. And I'm kind of that, but I'm actually useful, unlike that guy. So that's what I do. I don't quit my day job, but a lot of people try to make a living doing Liberty stuff. And a lot of people will make a living at it for a year or two and then think that's going to last forever. But the thing is, people really get kind of sick of being told what to do and how to live their life, especially if they're libertarians, by one person. So they kind of want to go on to the next voice. And what I'm doing is I'm training the next batch of voices. I don't want to be the center of attention on the Freedom Fiends. I'm kind of the cat herder, and I'm on every day, but there's always a different co-host. Oh, I want to say that Garrett quit the Freedom Fiends today. That was kind of mind-blowing to me. Did I tell you that, Chandler?
You did mention that to me.
Yeah, he didn't give much of a reason either. He said that that he had a new project that was going to take up his evenings. And I wrote him back and said, what, marriage? And he didn't write back. But I don't, you know, he may not have seen it yet. But yeah, I thought that was kind of weird, man. He was, you know, he's a mate. He's one of our buds. He's one of the dudes, one of the gang. And I've known him for a long time. But, you know, I have to remember, I did help him set up a really good podcast a few years ago when he pod faded on that. So I don't know. I'm looking for people that are into it for the long run. And you seem to be in it for the long run, Chandler.
Oh, I love it, man. It's like I was telling you earlier, I like podcasting, and it has an interesting element to it. And I miss doing it because I don't do it as much anymore with my buds as I used to. But there's something really magical and special about actually talking on the radio.
Yep, I feel that way too. I've always been fascinated by radio. And also, you have a much different audience on radio. I mean, we reach people on radio we would never, ever, ever, ever reach on the internet. They'd never find us. Yeah. Because radio is broadcasting, internet is narrow casting. And, you know, people on the internet, I mean, the thing is, like, radio has always been kind of lowest common denominator until recently, where, like, you had a show that was just about gardening, or you had general interest shows too, but not really like weird libertarian, you know, general interest, rock and roll, conspiracy, Bitcoin, cats, you know, all the things that we cover. So, but there's an audience out there. We keep adding radio stations, but, yeah, man. Yeah. It's pretty fascinating to do radio. I'm digging it. I'm glad you're sticking around. I'm not asking for a commitment on it, but I'm glad you seem to be sticking around and other people seem to be sticking around. And I was kind of surprised Garrett left, man. And, yeah, I don't know. I just sent him some really nice equipment too. I'm not saying he owes, you know, it was a gift. There's no strings attached, but I was hoping he'd get to use that on the show, man. But he got it. And then, you know, 2 days later said he was canceling, and he'd already had like 4 months of stuff booked. So I had to go, find people to fill in on short notice.
To me,
for some of them,
the Freedom Fiends and what you have created is an opportunity. Like I said, I really like the idea of reaching new audiences.
Yeah.
And I listen, like, people like you listen to the show you're on. I'm like, well, you know, I'm only on a couple of times a month.
You have to, man. I mean, I'd say I listen to as many of the shows as I can, even the ones that Derek does where I'm not on, but especially any of the ones where I'm on, in the same way that like a professional ball player, you know, football or basketball would watch the game tapes to improve, you know?
Exactly.
And I think anybody who's a co-host on here absolutely should listen to their own shows and as many of the shows they're not on as possible.
Oh yeah. I mean, I subscribe on iTunes and I throw it on my iTunes because I have a half hour commute each day, you know, to and from, plus a little bit of extra travel time. And I just pop the Freedom Fiends in. I used to listen to Ben Stone when he was podcasting more frequently.
Yeah, he's pretty much podcasting frequently on the Freedom Fiends now. When I had those 9 vacancies in the next 4 months because Garrett bailed, my first call was to Ben Stone, who's already doing like 1 a week, and now he's doing 2 a week for the next 4 months. And who doesn't want more Ben Stone, the Bad Quaker?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's it right there. And, so yeah. And I even listen to the ones I don't really like listening to myself. I have that.
Oh, you have to,
you know, how people are like, oh, I sound so weird when I'm recorded. You hear yourself differently, but I do, I listen to myself and I constantly strive to sound more professional and more coherent. And when you listen to yourself, you hear those flaws, you hear those inconsistencies, and you learn to adapt to them and improve. And I think that's a big part of growing. So yeah, I've always looked at being on the Freedom Fiends as an opportunity. So yeah, thank you.
You're welcome, and thank you for your service.
Cool.
So yeah, I want to talk about this thing called Thrive. I've talked about several people in Liberty that I have issues with. You know, the three main ones are Stefan Molyneux, who, you know, you can go back and listen to find out what I don't like about him. And let's see, Mark Stevens, who is a non-attorney who gives legal advice on a podcast and also put out a bio recently that said he's the only host on radio talking about bringing about a voluntary society. And first of all, he's not on radio. And second of all, there are at least 25 other hosts on two shows, this show and Free Talk Live, who are actually doing that. So it's kind of like stolen valor. You know, when people claim to have done military service to get the perks and respect that military people get, it's called stolen valor, and it really upsets military people and their families, and it is a crime. And I think it's fraud. It's a crime. Absolutely. So, you know, I think Mark Stevens, I don't know if he wrote the bio that's on libertopia.org or if they just made it up themselves, but it's absolutely inaccurate. And this is the third show I've railed about that on. But I did an open letter to him a couple years ago saying that I thought he was doing more harm than good because he is giving people legal advice who are facing like serious crimes. I'm not just talking about traffic tickets, like felonies. And, you know, basically telling them to go in and challenge the authority of the judge in court, you know, kind of a sovereign citizen-y thing, but he's not a sovereign citizen. He's an anarcho-capitalist libertarian like us. But all I wanted him to do was to put a disclaimer on his show once an hour saying, he's not an attorney, but blah, blah, blah. And he wouldn't do that and laughed at the thought of doing that because people think he's an attorney. And you know, we have an attorney on this show, Randy England, who's a practicing attorney and former prosecutor who is an ANCAP, who believes, as I believe, that lawyers should not need to be licensed and the market would take care of it. But somebody claiming to be acting like an attorney when they're not, you know, they don't really have the experience and the knowledge. You can't get the knowledge just from books of how to behave in court. It doesn't work, man.
I agree.
So we're going to talk about more people I don't like when we come back from this trip to the market. Man, my bully pulpit.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and some of his weird friends. And yes, we're broadcasting this into space.
This show survives on donations from fiends like you. We put that money back into our show and Liberty Outreach and donate most of our ad space to Liberty organizations that make a difference. We're also a teaching hospital, educating the next generation of Liberty Talkers on the skills needed to keep the radio flame of truth burning into the future. Put your money where your heart is and make a donation of any amount to the Freedom Fiends. Please go to freedomfiends.com and click on the spinning coin on any post.
Hey, this is Nathan Explosion from Death Clock, and you're listening to the Freedom Fiends on the radio worms.
All right, so I'm talking about people I don't like. Not people I don't like, but people who do stuff that I think gives Liberty a bad name. And I really think that Liberty needs to kind of, I don't think police itself is the right term, but, you know, kind of...
Focus?
What's that?
Focus?
I don't think it needs to focus because that implies collectivism, like we need to plan it centrally, which I don't believe either. That's antithetical to Liberty, but... I mean, there's a thing that every libertarian says, including all these people I'm criticizing, that, you know, in the free market, you wouldn't need, consumer protection agencies because the free market would take care of it by just shunning people that put out garbage and or dangerous information. And the thing is, in Liberty, that doesn't seem to really be happening. And whenever somebody is brave enough to stand up and say, hey, that guy's doing something ridiculous, that guy's doing stolen valor, along with giving bad, you know, possibly bad legal advice and not bothering to tell people he's not an attorney, or saying, you know, that other guy is telling people to leave his family, their families, you know, and in public says it's only if they're abusive, but in private says all families are abusive. He's the only good parent ever. And that everybody should leave their families, like Stefan Molyneux says. Or, you know, another guy is Chris Cantwell, who I don't really think needs any, like, I don't really concentrate on him very much because I think he shoots himself in the foot figuratively and maybe one day will literally. I've seen him use a gun. You know, I mean, the guy's tagline on his blog is, you know, atheist, agnostic, a-hole. And but for some reason, when you call the guy an a-hole, he gets upset, even though it's basically on his business card. So, but I think that guy is self-evident, everything that's wrong with him. And I don't think it needs to be pointed out. And I think he is his own worst enemy, and that's going to take care of itself. But Molyneux I'm mainly interested in because he's popular, and he's kind of like the really popular one outside of the movement. And there are actually people who think that I go after these people to try to raise my own standing. The funny thing is, it actually lowers my standing. We've lost fans of ours who were fans of Molyneux. We've lost donations, but I keep doing it because I think it has to be done. And nobody in Liberty who has an audience is coming out and giving coherent, cogent arguments about the some of the loonier type people in Liberty. And there's one I want to talk about that I haven't touched on before because I didn't really know it existed until today. Somehow I avoided it. And it's the Thrive documentary or the Thrive movement. And it's kind of really on its way down. It had a big surge in 2011 when this documentary came out, and it's been getting steadily less popular since then. But their documentary has about 8 million views on YouTube. So it's run by a guy named Foster Gamble, who is one of the heirs to the Procter and Gamble fortune. So this guy is a multi millionaire, if not a billionaire. He's probably about 60 years old. He's a distinguished gray-haired, you know, good-looking, physically fit gentleman that, you know, has a lot of charisma, and he appears on camera and people go, "Oh, I want to listen to him." And he made this documentary that's on YouTube only. It's not, and it is on DVD, but it's not even on IMDb, which is surprising to me because from what I know about filmmaking, I'm a filmmaker. I watched his film today. This thing had a budget of between $500,000 and $1 million. And like he didn't bother getting distribution for it, which you could buy if you had that kind of money. So it's not even on IMDb. Like my movies, I have like 3 or 4 movies on IMDb, and the biggest budget one is like $20,000, and the lowest budget one is like $600. But I have distribution for them, so they're on IMDb. But have you seen any of this documentary?
I have, and we were talking earlier, and when you asked me if I'd seen it, and it's very misleading because a lot of the philosophy that's spouted is stuff that libertarians and ANCAPs in particular would agree with.
Yeah, there's a lot of truth in it, and then a lot of really crazy, I would say, I'm skeptical about a lot of the stuff in it, like the, and I'm choosing my words carefully. I don't want to say it's nutbaggery, because this guy probably has, you know, lawyers on staff, but I'm very skeptical about the UFO connections and the perpetual motion connections of it. But other than that, it takes a bunch of like boilerplate conspiracy theories that everyone has done to death better for 30 years or 40 years. And then just kind of adds in this bit of new age, quote unquote, wisdom, and then mixes it in with some UFO stuff and some perpetual motion machine, and basically says this is going to save the planet and you need to tell two friends. But there's no real thesis to the whole thing, you know?
Yeah, it's very incohesive from what I gather.
All right, we'll be back.
You and the hamster in your brain are listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends.
Hey, this is Squiscar Squig Elves from Death Clocks. And you are listening to the Freedom Fiends on the, you know, the radios. And I guess it says worms now, so there you go.
You've read books, attended lectures, and you know the Constitution well enough to know it's a well-crafted blueprint to create an ever-increasing federal empire. But there's still one thing missing.
buttons.
Freedom Fiends now has buttons. You'll get state speech is hate speech, guns and weed, buy sheep for sheep on sheep, and two designs for the Freedom Fiends. Wear them with pride. Use them to start conversations with statists. It's only $10 for 5 buttons, including shipping. Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the link at the top that says buttons.
What does freedom mean? Tune in to LRN.FM to find out. LRN.FM is the Liberty Radio Network, a collection of live talk radio and podcasts, all coming from a principled pro-liberty perspective. LRN.FM show hosts aren't left, right, or conspiracy kooks. You can tune in 24/7 to LRN.FM via your phone, computer, satellite, and more. Listen free anytime at LRN.FM. That's LRN.FM.
Creamy Radio Audio. Want caviar sound on a cat food budget? Creamy Radio Audio by the Freedom Fiends has great free tips so you can sound like a pro without spending like one. The most powerful form of human communication is one person speaking to another. But if people have to suffer through your sound, they'll change the channel and miss your message. With articles on microphones, preamps, recorders, mastering, recording remotely over the internet, doing a podcast, even getting a show on actual radio, the Freedom Fiends show you what they use and where to get it. Whether you're a talk show host, voiceover artist, podcaster, evangelist, or just want to record your loved ones for the ages, at Creamy Radio Audio, the Freedom Fiends will help you make the most of your sound. Creamy Radio Audio will help you speak to the world with sound that will make people want to keep listening. Check out creamyradioaudio.com. That's creamyradioaudio.com.
Freedom Fiends. Yeah, so we're talking about the Thrive documentary. And this is something that's kind of faded out to not anyone really pays attention to it anymore. But it's still worth mentioning because there are people in Liberty who back it, and those people should be examined for have their head examined for backing it. Like Jeff Berwick was really into this whole thing when it came out, and that's kind of weird. And then the other thing is, like, just because this thing is faded out and only has a few people still paying attention to it, the next thing's going to come up, and I really want people to not be sucked into half-baked ideas. And this whole thing is a half-baked idea. I mean, basically, again, the Thrive documentary, which you can go watch on YouTube. It's Thrive, the movie, something like that. If you just search that, it'll come up. It's the one with 8 million views. And it's basically a combination of, like, UFOs are real and visit the Earth and have brought technology, which I don't know, prove it, you know. And then but there's a whole bunch of stuff in it that's absolutely true, which a lot of these people do. They take like a bunch of truth and then a bunch of conjecture and mix it together, and since they have some truth in there, like about, you know, how corporations get embedded with the government and control the food supply and control the health, your health care systems and things like that. You go, I know that's true. This must all be true. No, you have to look at each aspect of it. And there's really no solution offered in this, although the whole thing is presented like it's grand knowledge. And Stefan Molyneux does the same thing. Stefan Molyneux takes really old basic ideas like the non-aggression principle, which all of us believe in, you don't aggress on other people, and extend it to don't hit children, which is smart. But, you know, that's been in the mainstream for since the late 40s, early 50s, when Dr. Spock's baby book came out, and then combines it with, like, you know, dream analysis, which most psychiatrists have debunked, and, you know, just delivers it in a charming British accent with a lot of charisma, and people believe it, you know. And he's fast with words, and he's good with debating, and debating doesn't prove anything. Like, you know, Molyneux fans always say, well, if you don't like him, debate him. And that's like, that comes up so commonly. It's almost like statists saying, well, who would build the roads? You know, it's their rote answer. That's one of them. Another answer is not an argument. Like, people say, that's not an argument when you say something factual that's wrong about their dear leader. to the point where, like, Molyneux actually put out a video today called Not an Argument. I couldn't watch it. I can't watch that guy. So there's all these people in Liberty. The reason I bring out, you know, Foster Gamble, the guy who did the Thrive documentary, is because, and he's barely a libertarian. I mean, he's even asking for government solutions in this, including net neutrality, which we explain in the first hour why it's a bad idea and it'll do the opposite of what it says it'll do. And he, you know, he's like, we need to audit the Fed. You know what? The Fed was audited a few years ago. It didn't change anything. And, you know, I mean, the NSA has basically been audited by Edward Snowden, and it didn't change anything. The real thing that's going to change things is people educating each other on the immorality of government and the fact that you can't fix it and that you should withdraw your consent at every possible turn that you can, you know, without landing you in jail or with landing you in jail, if you want to go that far.
Yeah, I've been browsing this guy's website pretty extensively here in the last 15 minutes, and he does say a lot of good stuff. He has a very ANCAP theme, but one of the things that throws me is he talks about campaign finance reform and how we need to fix the system. Now, he says that people should be able to choose the governments that they want to live under. I guess
then they're not governments.
If
you can choose them and leave them and change them at will at no cost, they're not governments. They're service organizations, like, you know, like your utility company, if it wasn't controlled by the government.
Right. So he makes a good point there, but then he's talking about verified voting and election defense alliance and you know, how we need to change the voting process to be more democratic. And that, to me, that's very contradictory.
Yeah.
And he seems to be a very big fan of Stefan Molyneux too.
Yeah.
He's mentioned him several times in different pages on the site.
I wonder what Stefan Molyneux's feeling is about the Thrive movement. I kind of have a feeling he wouldn't have a very high opinion of it because it might be a competition to
his thing. That's what I was thinking. It's
And both organizations have a similar kind of, like, devotee, you know, people who are into Thrive and are into Molyneux and are into Zeitgeist, which is a whole nother thing that the Thrive thing is based on. I mean, those people will defend their dear leaders like they're defending their family. And the thing is, like, none of these guys have any, you know, new knowledge, and their fans hear the non-aggression principle for the first time, you know, from Stefan Molyneux and think he invented it. And they hear this interconnection of a bunch of conspiracy theories and some facts and some new agey stuff from Foster Gamble's Thrive movement. And they think, and he's rich. They think he must know what he's talking about. He's rich. Although the thing is, a lot of mainstream conspiracy people really kind of threw Foster Gamble under the bus because of who his family is. Like, basically he's part of a company that's been tied in, like, one of the biggest corporations in America, you know, since the late 1800s. So they're like, he can't be pure. He's part of, you know, the Illuminati or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it seems to me, and I'm certainly not telling him what he should do, but, where he has so much wealth at his disposal, if he believes all this stuff, why not walk the walk and set up his own community? Why can't he buy, like, an island somewhere and just kind of...
Well, Jeff Berwick tried that and got a bunch of people to invest in it, and about 30 people... the story is that about 30 people invested their life savings, a total of about $7 million. And Jeff Berwick and the other guy who were the principals in this Gulch Chile movement, they're both calling the other guy a thief, you know, according to the article where they were both interviewed in Vice magazine. So who knows? There's an inordinate amount of money missing, and both guys are pointing fingers at the other guy. So, you know, and you know, I'm not saying that Jeff did anything intentionally wrong, but... you know, for a financial advisor, it wasn't very good financial advice, I think, to tell people to invest in something that wasn't vetted to the point where the other guy could steal the money if that's what happened, you know?
Yeah.
And that's really serious. I mean, that's even a more serious thing, really, than, like, Molyneux telling people to leave his family is, you know, $7 million of other people's money has gone missing. And that kind of stuff really gives liberty a bad name. And I got Jeff to say on record, I asked him the question nobody else has asked him when he was on the Freedom Fiends a few months ago. I said, you know, are you willing to make amends to these people? And he said, yeah, I'll work the rest of my life if I have to do it. Which is good that he got that on record. It's not a legal promise, you know, but he got it on record. So he said it so he can be held accountable if he doesn't, but that's quite a tall order to make also.
Yeah, it is. Well, to me, like, it's funny because I was talking with a friend of mine, we were looking at, real estate, and there's an island off the coast of Maine. There's a whole island that's actually for sale. And like this island, it's like $65,000.
But you'd still be under the United States or Canada's government.
Well, yeah, you have to, I guess, work within the system as much as you have to. I mean, you're not going to be able to get away with stuff.
I think you can do a better job working outside the system legally, or, you know, whatever, wherever you are, then moving a bunch of people to a remote location that attracts attention to it, you know?
Well, and I wouldn't even move a bunch of people. I would just, I suppose, if I had that sort of money, I think I'd buy that island and get a few of my friends together and just kind of live a lot of what we talk about, farming and do that thing. And I'm not expecting that I'd change the world, but I think if you do that, you set an example and you can inspire people and people will take you more seriously. I mean, it's one thing to create a website and a movie, and I'm not saying that's an easy task. It's, you know, it definitely requires effort and maintenance, but it's another thing to actually go out and do it.
Yeah.
And it seems to me that a lot of this stuff, you know, people are pledging to get involved. There's the get involved buttons on all the pages and, you know, 15,000 people are involved. Okay, what are they doing? You know, it seems to me
it's, you know what it is. I can tell what it is with him and Molyneux. They are both people who at some point in their life, you know, they're both smart guys, you know, really smart guys, really intelligent guys, really eloquent guys. Molyneux probably more so than, Foster Gamble, but you know, Gamble's a pretty smart guy. And although Molyneux does all of his own production of videos and stuff, and I guess Mike helps him now too, but Gamble paid a bunch of people to do editing and animations and original music and filmmaking. And I mean, it's a cheesy movie, Thrive is, but the production qualities are, you can tell it's dripping with money. And you know, he interviewed in person people all over the world. So he either flew to them or flew them to him, maybe in his private jet. I don't know. But yeah, Molyneux does it all on his own, which I have more respect for, you know, doing it on your own. But regardless, I think that, oh man, people.
I see a lot of this and it just seems to me like people aren't walking the talk. And we've talked about it before. There are things you can do and you have to realize that there are definitely consequences to it, but there are things you can do that demonstrate your willingness and your ability to stand up. And I think that's what inspires people. I mean, like asking for permission slips to engage in activities. We talked about this.
I actually did something. Foster Gamble was on the Freedom Fiends once. I remembered that after I was halfway through this movie. He was speaking at a Liberty event. And, you know, the guy's like barely a libertarian. He's like a libertarian combined with a leftist, combined with a spiritualist, combined with all these other, like, it seems like he's never met an alternative lifestyle he doesn't like. And he's tried to roll them into one big fat joint of this movie and this movement. But he was speaking at Libertopia 2 or 3 years ago. And one of the guys from Bitcoin Not Bombs, it was not Davi, it was Drew, I think, was doing a live remote Freedom Fiends for us from there. And I was on the other end of the mic. And, you know, he was just like, people were walking by and he was pulling him over and have him do a little interview. And Foster Gamble came on and I knew he was a rich guy. I didn't know about the Thrive thing, but I said, hey, you should buy a 3D printer for Cody Wilson. This is before Cody had finished his first gun when they'd taken away the rental printer. And he said I'd look into it, but he never did it. So I did something.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends, tasing you with liberty since 2011. Learn more at freedomfiends.com.
The Central Scrutinizer is a Soviet-style Leviathan trying to keep track of all you do. That's why I use a VPN or virtual private network from Bola VPN. BolaVPN is inexpensive, secure, and will allow you to use your computer without leaving a trail. BolaVPN is now also offering torrent seed boxes for safely sharing media with the world. And if you open a support ticket saying you heard about them from the Freedom Fiends, they'll add 3 extra days free. That's BolaVPN at BolaVPN.net. So, meow. You know what meow stands for? That's nice. You know what meow stands for? It stands for the moral equivalent of war.
Yeah.
This is Jimmy Carter saying, but he didn't call it meow. Some journalists did. I think that's pretty funny. So the redemption in the third act, I'd say, is, you know, look out for people that have a lot wonky about them and don't follow them and don't need to follow anyone. The whole idea of liberty is not to follow people. And look out for people who follow or defend people that have a lot wonky about them without looking at the evidence. Like Chris Cantwell, there's a lot about him that I could say bad stuff about. But one thing is he and Larkin Rose, another guy, a guy that I actually used to have a lot of respect for. I never had any respect for Cantwell, but Larkin Rose, I used to have a lot of respect for, but he defended Molyneux on this whole, you know, Molyneux took down a YouTube channel of a critic. And then there was a bunch of mincing of words between him and his henchman, Mike, of like, oh, well, we took that down because they were exposing private information about our listeners. And they weren't. That was a different channel. It was taken down at the same time. And they never corrected that. They let people, you know, like, I can't say it was lying, but it wasn't an honest, like, hey, I always tell the truth and I say when I was wrong. You know, they haven't addressed it. They haven't addressed any of it. And Larkin Rose, like, defended that guy like he was defending his family, man. He was just like a bulldog of, like, I won't look at the evidence. You're wrong. You know, and there are mountains of evidence out there. A good place to start would be the website FDRLiberated.com or the Freedom Fiends interview. I think it's called something like Freedom Fiends interviews two former members of Stefan Molyneux's inner circle, and also all the links on that page. But so you got all these people in Liberty that are kind of like leaders, but they're either doing really wonky stuff or giving people a pass to the point of defending them without looking at the evidence on people who are doing wonky stuff. And it is so antithetical to do that. It's so antithetical to the basic premise of, you know, living a voluntary society, of that people who do wonky stuff would be exposed. You know, basically they're just giving these people a pass, and that makes me not want to give them a pass. So buyer beware, and don't fall for these things, these people that come along and say, I have all the answers, and then recycle a bunch of old answers and mix them with some other answers and do it with a lot of charisma. And you don't need leaders, man. I mean, you need speakers, you need people talking in liberty, but the more the merrier. And I'm not trying to build an empire. I'm not out like trying to make me look good and have all the answers. I'm out there trying to like build a network of people that, you know, have the raw material to be a good talker, and training them in the technical aspects of it and trying to get them as good as possible. What say you, sir?
Yeah, I would agree with all that. And one of the things I've run into is I've gotten to the point in my life where I want to stop asking for permission from the state to do certain activities that don't need permission, that are natural activities. And I've encountered a lot of resistance. People say, well, you know, you got to do that. You got to, oh, what's a good example? You got to register your car. You got to get your hunting and your fishing license. You got to do all these things.
You got to choose your battles though, man. If you don't register your car, I mean, I'm not saying don't do it.
Oh yeah. But, you know. Right. I mean, I don't have the opportunity because my work requires it. But if you have that.
God bless anyone who's got, you know, some bless anyone or kudos to anyone who has the guts to drive a car with homemade license plates that say, I have a right to drive. I wouldn't do it. But, you know, My hat's off to you if you have the guts to do that.
Right. So there are certain things that I just refuse to do. And people are like, well, I agree with you in principle, but you got to understand this is just the way it is. And it's like, no, this is not the way it is. And then they'll say, well, you're just one person. And it starts with one person. It starts with you. Because if you're not willing to do these things, other people aren't going to be willing, there's not going to be any meaningful change. I mean, you don't have to go out and start a rally and a movement. Just do it yourself and inspire people.
I'm really skeptical of anybody who's trying to start a movement. I really am. Yeah. I mean, Heaven's Gate was a movement. You know, the people that jumped on the jumped on the cyanide train on the comet. Speaking of which, somebody landed a spacecraft on a comet today, and we didn't get around to that. It was in our show notes, but that's pretty cool. And I think I'm going to use a picture that I made of that for the for the show notes today. All right. It's been a great show, Chandler St. Pierre. Thank you for your service.
Thank you, Michael. Worms.